to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
If you're drowning and I throw you a
life jacket. Welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom. I'm Mr. Dave Scatina on the board. SP Futures down 12. NASDAQ Futures down 57. Today we flipped from the June to the September month. So in a little while we'll only have one. I have two on my screen now. I have the June's down 56 and a quarter, and I have the September's down 59. So in a little while we won't have any June's. And we don't have to worry about those anymore, David. We'll flip over to the spoos, right?
The spoos, yes.
From the sperms, or whatever they used to call them. What do we got the Dow doing? The Dow is down 99. So we have gold down 65 bucks. Is a hint that interest rates going up, which I don't get that connection there, because when I started the business, interest rates were like 15% and gold was at record highs. So there's a sort of a yin and the yang there between interest rates are bad for gold because it doesn't pay a dividend. It pays to store it. And by the way, it pays to carry the money if you want to be long gold. Pays to carry the gold. But still, if inflation goes up, gold goes up. So it's kind of a two-edged sword there. Speaking of two-edged swords, Lou, how are you?
I'm edged this morning.
Yes. Well, what do you think? Were you in the Fed meeting yesterday, or were you tied in, or what?
No, I don't pay attention to that stuff.
Why not? It's your financial future.
It may or may not be, but I don't look at the Fed meetings as anything. I look at the way you guys look at the Fed meetings as kind of the way the Oracle at Delphi, you know, looked at, or people looked at the Oracle of Delphi. You look at the entrails spread out on the ground, and you try to, you know, discern the meaning of these comments coming from the oracles up at the Fed. And I'm not sure, frankly, there's any validity to anything that comes out of the Fed these days. It's as political as anybody else or as any other D.C. entity. And, you look at its pronouncements accordingly.
That's the truth. Sometimes things happen to you.
I just don't have the skill at entrail reading that, or the interest that you guys do.
Well, it's, some of it to me is amusement. I mean, I have actually a thing that happened in my past, in his past, that gives me a totally different view of this mess, especially since I went through the inflation thing that obviously I growl about ad infinitum. But I was back in my ute. I was driving south, David, when everybody still lived on in Francisco, and I just moved north, and I was going to take my mom to breakfast, and it's like 7 o'clock on a Saturday morning where nobody else is up. I'm listening to this radio show, and they've got some guy, how's that for Southside, and he's a former member of the Fed. And he was around during the inflation fiasco. So this is probably 1987, 88, somewhere in there, 86 even. And the guy goes, well, you know, I was on the Fed back when, during the inflation days. And he said, well, we had this Arab oil embargo. And it jumped the stuff up, so we figured it was all oil, even though it turned out to not be. It turned out to be money supplement. It turned out basically that we were the ones that were doing it. He says it was oil. And then we said, okay, well, it's only oil, so let's take the oil out. And then the food prices started to go up. And he says, so then somebody says, well, you know what? Look at how much oil is involved in the food system. I mean, you dry out the soybeans. That takes oil or natural gas. And, oh, by the way, you got to take the soybeans and corn to market. It's a truck. Then you got to barge it somewhere. That's another more diesel. Then you got to make cornflakes, and you got to get the cornflakes at a place. Why don't we take food out too? Because it's really 20% of your food prices is transportation. So let's remove food and energy. He goes, then
we're talking from the consumer price index, right?
Yeah, yeah. And then he says, well, it was in there, but they just ignored it. Now they'll say X food and energy even now, and he'll say. And he said, you know, we took something else out. And he goes, finally, we got to this meeting, and we all looked at each other and said, we've tried everything we possibly could to ignore it. Guess what? We've got inflation, and we've had it for a while. And I kept thinking that yesterday was that meeting where they could say all they want about we're still trying to get to 2%, and it's transitory and blah. There was no way yesterday, even these guys and women, they could possibly get on national TV and tell everybody in this country who's seen it, just sees it right in front of their face. What, 10% 1 month in used car prices, 7% the next. So, I mean, it's unbelievable. I mean, I keep track at the Restaurant Depot, which is the wholesale price. Stuff is up 50% since 2 months ago, 3 months ago.
Well,
yeah, but I'm saying there's no way.
It looks like lumber prices are finally starting to come down, but the thing that I marvel at is the administration's, and again, I this is why I don't put any stock in what these guys say, because the pronouncements by these federal executive agencies, which have been staffed by or have been headed up by ideologues now for some time since the new administration came in. And don't get me wrong, there are ideologues on both sides, but the ideologues that are in place right now are the ones that are ignoring economic reality, which is you dump this much money into the economy. You dump all this money to people directly in the form of, basic income that they don't have to work for. And so there's no productivity raise in commensurate with the income raise. And then on top of that, you do things like cut off pipeline development and energy supply or energy development projects. You just stop those cold, and you're amazed, when oil and gas prices go through the roof. And I mean, what are we? We're paying 50% more now for a gallon of gas here in Colorado. God knows what it is in Chicago.
Yep.
And and look back and go, all of this, every single sector of the economy runs on energy and needs energy to operate. And a rise in energy prices is going to ripple all the way through the economy on top of the already inflationary pressure that we've put in there with this money.
Well, and you mentioned the thing that I'm going to push back a little, Lou, in that you sort of mentioned the ideologues, okay, and I'm not going to debate that. However they got there, whatever side they are, I mean, David and I were talking about that when we walked in this morning from the parking place. Whatever side they are, they acted the exact same way as the people did in 1973. So,
yes.
I mean, it's more of a human instinct than it is an ideologue. It can't be me. It has to come from some other place. It couldn't be our fault. It has to be the supply chain. It has to be something else. It has to be COVID. It had to be the dirty air from
73. I'm going to turn this now on, again, I have a lot of my very liberal friends and progressive friends, when COVID broke out, and I assume they're saying the same thing with respect to the economic news, they go back and say, we have to trust the experts. And I have been in too many lawsuits. I have cross-examined too many, quote, experts, unquote, to have any faith in expertise that is not backed up by a common sense explanation of why we should believe this particular opinion. And it's crazy. We did not see that kind of common sense explanation in during the COVID development. In the face of data that just said, hey, this stuff you guys are doing is actually damaging and killing, more people or removing more valuable life hours from our country than a non-preventative measure, letting the disease run its course would affect. This same kind of mentality, pervades our economic system now.
Well,
experts are sitting there, this goes all the way back. My skepticism goes all the way back to David Halberstam's brilliant, The Best and the Brightest, which talked about our foreign policy experts and the enmeshing us into Vietnam. Getting us caught into that quagmire.
How is it, Lou, that you
and I, it's astounding how frequently that happens. And so when I hear experts, quote, experts, unquote, talking about this stuff, my immediate reaction is, you need to put this in what I call the 25 words or less explanation so that a non-expert understands what you're saying. And if you can't do that, or if you're not able to, or if what you say doesn't jibe with the reality that I can perceive myself, then we're in trouble. And it just seems to me this is just yet another round of that.
Lewis, children of the Vietnam era, when you were talking about how you can't remember how to go back, I'm thinking anybody who grew up in that era has never believed anything these guys have said and never should have believed. There hasn't been a truth out of one of these mutts in since I can remember, a real truth.
Sometimes you get the truth, but it's like dealing with the news media. You know, I was involved as an attorney in several cases that made the news. And the short answer is about these guys, or the short description about these guys is this: their job is to sell advertising. If the truth sells advertising, then you will get a reasonable facsimile of the truth or the accurate facts being reported. But if they need to skew the facts to sell advertising, or alternatively to promote a particular political narrative, then that's what you get. And for politicians and people working in politics, their job is to get reelected. If the facts look like they're going to get them reelected, then you'll get the facts. But otherwise, you get some spun version of reality that you have to, like I said, I double check everything that comes out of these guys' mouths. This is not, again, restricted to one party. I perceive it because of my orientation. I perceive it to be particularly worse on the progressive side. But, you know, it was the neocon ideologues that took us into Iraq in 2003. And again, reality was telling us one thing, but these guys were seeing something else.
Well, there's somehow we have gotten, I don't know if it's, what did George Orwell call it, something speak, What was the term?
Newspeak.
Was it newspeak? Was some kind of speak where everybody just went with the flow, even though it made no sense?
No, that was the creation of the new language they were creating, where they were eliminating words like freedom and liberty from the language, so that people couldn't develop the concepts in their heads.
Well, I'll ask you. I mentioned this the other day, I probably mentioned it years ago, but when Ceres was still open, none of these downtown places are open. One of the young ladies used to be a waitress in there. It was from Romania.
Ceres is not open.
None of these places are open. Well, the only place open is downstairs in our building.
When you finish this, I want to talk about this latest story out of Chicago. Go ahead.
Which one? The 8 people shot on Saturday, or the 10 people shot on Monday, or the guy shot on Saturday afternoon with 60 bullets 2 blocks from the office? Which one do you want to talk
about? No, I want to talk about your... your state's attorney.
Oh, God. Well, yeah, okay. What I'm saying is, she sits down one night and she goes, "Chief, can I ask you a serious question?" And Lou, you wouldn't have said no to her. Easy on the eyes, shall we say? Very nice girl. And I'll tell you what, talk about true blue. She and her husband opened up a trucking company. They're from Romania. And within like 6 months, they had 5 trucks. She worked her fanny off scheduling trucks and didn't know anything about the U.S. Within like 3 months, she taught herself all that stuff. And the old man goes out and buys a couple, has a couple of buddies, and all of a sudden they're delivering stuff all over the country. I mean, talk about not lazy and willing to learn stuff. I mean, just a terrific lady. She goes, when I was a little girl in Romania, the newspapers, when we were a communist country, used to have, you'd read them and you never got any information. She goes, it was all like somebody had read it before and editorialized it, for lack of a better term. She goes, and all of a sudden we're not communists anymore, and the gloves are off. People are calling people names and swear to the paper. She goes, it's very refreshing. I read the stuff here. It feels like I'm back in the communist country. Why is that? You know, I didn't have an answer for it. I said, you know what? Little Di. Di, I have no idea. I agree with you, but I don't know. I don't know if people just don't want to pay for real news, or whether it's all, takeover after takeover of the press. There's only a few people in charge, and they're the ones that are... I don't know. I mean... I do know that one of the guys.
Oh, I can tell you an important factor.
Well, I mean,
that we have developed the academic institutions that are pumping these people into the mainstream media. I have developed a monoculture, and that monoculture is a liberal progressive worldview, and that's the narrative that these people support, and that's the narrative that they skew their news to support. Well, and you won't see any more proof of it than this latest development where Joe Biden goes into his angry old man rant at that female reporter who had the temerity to ask him a question that was difficult, rather than what ice cream he had today or pudding he had today.
And
goes into this old man rant, and now Trump did the same thing and was castigated by the press and skewered for days. In this case, the press comes out and criticizes this female reporter for being mean and disrespectful to Joe Biden.
Well, Lou,
that's how it manifests.
We have a very close, once in a while we actually get a story, I say we, anybody gets a story where they kind of know something about, right? So I'll just say first name, Pedro. He's come on the show a lot. Matter of fact, we'll have him back hopefully pretty soon. Every he comes down whenever we ask him, we haven't asked him in a while. He was the financial reporter for the Wall Street Journal. When I say financial, he would go to the press meetings. And this was back when somebody from Hong Kong or something, somebody came out with a story. I used to talk all the time about the press. The Fed announcements where the guy would give some policy, essentially talk at 3 a.m. in mainland China, and miraculously, people were trading ahead of it. The guy'd say something very controversial, and the S&Ps would flip, 80 points at night or some crap. And I'd be sitting there saying, this is crazy. And these guys, somebody must know what these guys are going to say. It started before. Well, all of a sudden, there's this somebody somewhere comes out with a study saying all this stuff from the Fed is being front-run. And actually, the Labor Department, they said, was not being front-run. All the stuff was kept until the announcement. So it wasn't like they were after everybody. They said the Fed stuff was amazingly given out beforehand to some people. And there's this investigation, of course, run by the Fed, right, which is about as useful as whatever, something on a bull. And so he mentions to Janet Yellen, he was at the press conference, he goes, Chairman, what is the status of this investigation? Because, of course, it had been totally buried. She visibly stiffened, our lovely aunt or grandmother, whatever you think of her, a nice little old lady, she visibly stiffened, and you could tell she was seriously pissed off. Well, the call goes to the Wall Street Journal. Not only was he not ever asked back, I think he got fired. Well, that kind of power is not Joe Biden's fault. It's not Trump's fault. It's the Wall Street Journal's fault, or it's our fault, or somebody's fault. That should never happen. Because the question was very legit. It had been all over everywhere. It was a national story when there was an investigation started, and all he did was ask the status of the investigation. And he was never asked.
But that's simply another manifestation of what Trump referred to as the swamp, which is the hand-in-glove relationship between the press and the power elite. And the press needs, because their reporters are as lazy as anybody else. If they can get a story with a phone call rather than having to get up, go track out, interview somebody, track somebody down, do some research, if they can get the same information with a phone call, they're gonna promote conduct or engage in conduct that's going to ensure that their phone call always gets returned. And that's you don't get that kind of relationship by being aggressive and confrontational with members of the power elite.
Well, you can't possibly, if you're on TV, you cannot say anything bad. You have to genuflect to the press or to the Fed. You have to genuflect to the SEC. When we were I was on the board of the CBOE, Lou, whenever you had some sort of a concern about what the staff was doing, and let's be blunt. The staff is the friggin' hired help. The members own the place, and the staff was the hired help. Now, there happen to be some very terrific people there, okay? And they happen to be very competent and people I really liked. But they were the hired help. Let's never forget who was who, right? And yet, every time you said something at the board, even if it was somewhat mildly critical of staff, you'd have to start out with, I really think the staff here does a wonderful job. However, what is the preamble for? I mean, on TV now, if you listen to anybody, I think the Fed clearly has done a fantastic job in the COVID or managing the this and that and the other thing. Oh, by the way, in this one little area, man, they might think again. Why do you have to preamble it with basically oral sex, for God's sake? I mean, why do we have to do that to these people? They're the hired help, Lou, aren't they?
Well, I used to think that these folks, you know, these folks work for us, but
obviously they don't.
I mean, it's obviously that is incorrect, because we have something the founders were very leery of. We now have a professional management class that exists at the federal level in D.C. They're in their jobs forever because the civil service regulations make it virtually impossible to, you know, establish accountability. They're in their jobs forever. They have a very specific political bent, and woe betide anybody who challenges that bent, or even worse, threatens the little empires that have been set up there, in some cases the big empires.
Well, that goes back to J. Edgar Hoover.
Do you remember the actor that played this guy just died? You remember the movie Network?
You're not talking about Ned Beatty, are you? He just died.
Yes, I am. Okay. Remember the movie Network?
Yeah.
Okay. Ned Beatty he's the head of the network, and Howard Beale, the guy that was generating all their ratings and making money for them hand over fist as the mad newsman of the airways, comes out and lambastes this commercial deal that actually affected the revenue of the TV station because it attacked their advertisers. And Ned Beatty gives, and maybe David can find this, Ned Beatty gives one of the greatest speeches in movie history. It's right up there with Alec Baldwin's rant in Glengarry Glen Ross, where he sits Beale down in a conference room and just screams at it. You know, you have tangled with the fundamental forces of nature and the universe by interrupting this corporate relationship that was so crucial to them. And I remember just laughing at that scene because I thought this is comedy, but it really wasn't comedy. It was accurate. And these power relationships between the Fed, the federal government, and big tech, big defense contractor, big whatever, are very real. They're tangible, and you're allowed to tangle with them in certain areas. But for the most part, no. Just like with the press, you're allowed to tangle with the press in certain ways, but if you step outside the narrative that they've all been trained to reproduce and promote, then you're going to have trouble. And that's what happened with that question to Biden that wasn't about ice cream.
Well, Lou, it works its way down. We had, obviously, you've had guests through the years from CNBC, and you know, one of which everybody still knows. And I mentioned to him one day, I said, why do they give the questions? I mean, it's a lot different than if I interview somebody. I interview him, I ask him questions. I think the listeners, that's why he's here. They want to know about some stuff, and he or she, and he says, oh no, there's, you would think that when I'll just pick a company, you know, if the Chesapeake comes out with the real earnings, that the chairman would want to be the guy who gets on TV and talk to people and wants the national podium. But it's the other way around. It's CNBC or Fox News or Bloomberg, maybe not so much Bloomberg, but even so, they are concerned about any kind of ad revenue or whatever from this place, and they don't want to be out to any other chairman. There's a big cachet in having the chairman on first after the stuff, and in return for that, they will approve a few questions. And if you ask them anything else, they're liable to get up in a huff and walk out, and if they don't, they'll never come back. And it's the last thing you can have happen, is the chairman of IBM will not come back on CNBC. And I would say...
Sure, that's your hand in glove relationship.
But I would think that the power is the other way, Lou. I mean, I honestly would think that the power is the other way. That if Stocks and Jacks was a national show that listeners really piled into every day, I would have more power than I'd have all kinds of people who want to come on the show. It should be competition the other way. That the chairman of IBM would want to come on and to tell the truth, because by the way, he didn't. Other people, it's to me. How does it get wrong? I mean, the power is.
I think I think, again, you're coming at this from the position of the media system that you and I grew up with into our mid to late 20s. Before you saw this multitude of potential outlets and competitors. And in some ways, it's benefited the news tremendously. We have viewpoints on that we can reach now that we would never be able to get when it was just three networks controlling the
well. But you had but we only got a minute before the break. But step back on a little bit. In Chicago, we had four newspapers and three serious stations that actually did investigative
news.
Yeah,
but those are regional. Those are regional deals. And by the time you and I were in our 20s, television was the main source of news and PR for people. And if a newspaper did something, it was local impact only. But now with 30 or 40, you know, news network choices, these guys can pick and choose as to who they're going to favor with their presence. And so if you alienate them, they say, well, I'll just go over to MSNBC, or I'll go over to Fox Business, or I'll go over to, you know, OAN, their business report, or CNN, or whoever. That's part of it.
Well, I mean, if you're willing to be, I won't say it, but if you're willing to be something that rhymes with tick, you can say, I really wanted Luan to explain this, but when we told him we were going to ask these five questions, he refused to come on. I still have all the power.
Then nobody comes on.
Well, but they
nobody comes to your TV.
But I'm saying if you end up with the listenership, if you have the listenership, you have the power, is what I'm saying. To a certain extent, you can't be a knucklehead, but to a certain extent, if you were to say, by the way, the chairman of Microsoft refused to come on because I was going to ask him what we all want to know, and these are the three things, I don't think he wants that out there, does he?
I would agree, but, you know, as I said, there's lots of alternatives where they won't ask those questions.
Well, But then they never get asked, and it's bad.
Yeah, well, that's what's happening.
SB Futures down 8.
I want to talk to you about what's happening in your state's attorney's office.
Oh God, and we also got to talk a little bit about when you pitch at the Little League now, are you putting stuff on your hands and spinning these kids? Baseball.
I did when I played, but you know, I don't know what they're doing now.
We'll be right back, Stacks and Jacks.
Before you commit to an investment or any other decision, and Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics
you may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-401. 8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Here, right now.
Hello and welcome to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howell. Dave Scutino in the boardroom. Mr. Lou Michaels with us as well. SP futures down 8. NASDAQ futures down 47. Dow futures down 50. Actually coming back up here. I mean, what you're seeing today, I think, is, well, whatever. I'll keep the editorial part out of this. DAX down 6. Call that flat. FTSE down 32.5%. CAC around down 5. All that flat. So the only reaction really to anything is over in the FTSE. Asia, you got the Nikkei down 272. That's a full 1%. Shanghai up 7.2%. Oh, they were down yesterday. Hang Seng was down yesterday a lot too. They're up 121.4%. Yesterday, mainland China was down almost 2%. The Nikkei was up, and now Nikkei's down, and the other guys have come back a little bit. So it's really confusing how they're not matching over there at all these days. When I say over there, in the Asian part of the world, the Nikkei and the mainland Asia has been going opposite directions now almost every day. As a way of review, yesterday the Dow was down 265, S&P down 22, NASDAQ down 33. S&Ps were down 40 right after the announcement, and they came back about halfway. Actually, they came back almost all the way, and then went back down again on the close. Bonds, and this is kind of bizarre, U.S. 10-year 1.56, so it actually hasn't gone up at all with the announcement. Now, the announcement was that they're gonna start raising interest rates at the end of 2023. I will take the under on that, David. Absolutely take the under on that.
I will too.
And they also said the expectations for their inflation this year is gonna be 3.4 instead of 2. I'm gonna take the over on that. Just saying. What do I gotta call? Who's a very attractive young lady in the Cub games? Is that trying to get you to bet on the game in the middle of the game?
I can't think of her name.
But whatever sports betting that is. Bund, minus 0.16. So these guys have gone towards zero quite a bit. They were minus 0.29 like 2 days ago. Japan positive 0.06. UK positive 0.82. So we're all up a little bit except for us. Oil down 19 cents, 71.96. Brent down 26, 74.13. Natural gas down 3, 3.22. RBOB unchanged at 2.15. Gold. Whack, 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 down $62, $17.99. Silver down $1.12, $26.68. Copper down 9 cents, $4.29. I think I'm going to roll my protective puts down right after I'm done with the show, and I think I'm going to maybe get long some of this stuff even more. Get flagged for piling on, as they say, David. Crypto, Bitcoin up 350 to 39,165. What do you have for us, traffic, weather, sports?
Good morning. It's 6:38 in Chicago. Currently, the weather is 60, sunny degrees. We're going to have a high of 90 with a mix of clouds and sun. Possible strong storms tonight. In Phoenix, it's 94 and fair. They're going to hit a record high of 118 today. Traffic buildup on the Kennedy and Eisenhower due to long-term construction. We have slow traffic on two exit ramps. One is 55 North and 94. And the other one is the 294 and the 290 Expressway. And Major League Baseball last night. Sox hold on to beat the Rays 8-7 in 10 innings. Cubs drop 3 in a row, lose to the Rays 6-3. Diamondbacks fall to the Giants 13-7 for its 22nd straight road loss. tied for the longest such streak in the since 1900. The NHL and NBA semifinals continue, and golf, the U.S. Open, starts today at Torrey Pines. Back to you, Chief.
Do you watch a little bit of the Cub game last night and didn't make it to the end, but this guy DeGrom, there's never been a start like this ever. Lou, I don't know if you're familiar with this guy. He was a shortstop until he was a junior in college, pitched a couple games, and was a pitcher as a senior, and was like a seventh-round pick or something. The dude is pitched 10 games. Well, now he left last night with a shoulder injury, so I hope he's not. He's got more RBIs than he's given up earned runs.
Until last night.
No. He has he's given up 4 earned runs.
Oh, yeah, you're right. You are correct.
And he got another RBI last night. He didn't give any runs up. He struck out 8 of 9 guys.
I've been following the Cubs and the White Sox since the Rockies stink. And the Nuggets and the Avalanche both cratered in the second round of the playoffs. So I've switched back to my teams that give me some hope, and the White Sox and the Cubs. The Cubs look pretty good there for a run. They beat up some pretty good teams. But yeah, what I'm fascinated by, and I guess this is a reflection of a combination of really an effective farm system and trading. But the Cubs look like they're getting guys coming out of the woodwork. The White Sox certainly are.
Oh, yeah. Well, the Sox have such depth, it's scary. I mean, they've got people in. Well, the Cubs finally, when the Mets hit Bryant in the hand in the first game, I think it finally reached the point where there's not much left in the lineup. I mean, Horner's out. The right fielder was out for a while. The center fielder was out for a while. I mean, they've had nothing but injuries all over the place. The Sox have too, but they seem to have had people stepping up.
Yeah, so let me step now to the story that I couldn't believe when I read it, and that is the fight that's going on between your mayor and the chief of police on one side, and the state's attorney, which is an elected position in Chicago, on the other.
By the way, the mayor backed her big time. The mayor absolutely backed her. The mayor backed her big time.
She was there. They were all part of this progressive, de-incarceration movement. We're going to eliminate the school to prison pipeline. We're going to basically stop enforcing certain statutes because it results in us arresting too many criminals and putting them in jail, and they all tend to be of a certain race and demographic. Okay. So that was the move, and Fox has followed. She's the state's attorney, has followed through on this to the extent of Jesse Smollett not being prosecuted effectively. In any event, Chicago's gun crime is going through the roof again. The numbers are obviously, and again, this is all relative. We've had a pretty good run in Chicago for a little while of gradually decreasing shootings and murders.
I don't know about the shootings. The murders have gone down as the amount of
violent crime since the 1990s in Chicago is way down.
We've had a
decrease, but all of a sudden things are jumping back up again. So the police chief it basically tells his people, listen, we can't really control the guns because there are so many of them out there right now. So what we're going to do is we're just going to start arresting people if they're carrying a gun illegally, which apparently a significant portion of the downtown population in Chicago is. If they're carrying guns illegally, we're going to arrest them on illegal gun possession, irrespective of whether they've actually shot somebody at that time. If they've got a gun, if we arrest them, we stop them for, spitting on the sidewalk or whatever. It's going very close back, moving back very close to the New York Giuliani model, the broken windows policing that was used in the early 90s and very successfully. And this guy, your police chief says, we're going to start doing that. And they do. They start picking guys up on the street, dirtbags up on the street. And if they've got a gun with them and they don't have a concealed carry permit, which is very hard to get in Illinois, they don't have a concealed carry permit, they're in possession of an illegal weapon. And so they seize the gun and they imprison the guy. This is remarkably similar to the policy that Jody Weiss, the former police chief, who was put in, basically forced on daily by police misconduct cases in the late aughts, that Jody Weiss put into effect, where he said, you know, we can't control the guns, we're going to control the shooters, because we can lock the shooters up, and we're going to move on those guys. Well, it turns out that this is incompatible with the de-incarceration philosophy that the state's attorney believes in. And again, we're back to ideology now versus reality. Ideologically.
Let me editorialize here for 1 second. I just unbelievably, I was sitting next to, let's put it this way, a very experienced criminal attorney here in Chicago. No names. And he was telling me a few stories. And the creatures that are causing all the damage, and they're not all black. They're way ahead of this. If you see a bunch of people going down the street up to no good, you're probably going to see the 15-year-old carrying all the guns.
Oh, sure.
Is this guy was representing a 15-year-old?
This was the case. This was the case with that kid that got shot, Omar, or whatever his name was, that got shot. What was it? 3 months ago, by the cop. I mean, he was with a 21-year-old who shoots at somebody.
Yeah.
The two of them run down an alley. The 21-year-old gives the gun to the whatever he was, 14, 13?
Yeah.
He runs down the street. The cops can plainly see he's got the gun. And he gets shot when he throws the gun behind a fence and then spins around on the cops and they shoot him.
Right.
Because the last time they saw him, the last good look they had, he had a weapon. So, I get that. But the short answer is, we lock up the guys that are carrying the guns, it suddenly starts getting a lot harder to find people to carry the weapons for you.
Well, you end up with
they're locking up the...
Well, you end up with a bunch of 15-year-olds in jail is what you got. Or they're not in jail.
Well, you're in they're in juvenile facilities. But the short answer is, you're not going to be able to take the shooters off the guns off the street absent a complete police state solution, which I'm pretty sure Kim Fox doesn't want to enforce that either. So the idea that you've got this gun problem, okay, we're going to start locking up the people that are carrying the illegal guns. These are not people walking around that are legally in possession of these things, and they know they're not legally in possession of them, so we're going to start locking them up. Let's let that run out. Because, there are only so many 15-year-olds you're going to be able to find. They're going to be able to carry guns for you.
Lou, everybody...
And so if we start...
I know you're on a rant here, but can I up the, sure. the conversation just a hair? I mean, I'm with you on Kim Fox, and I think all the listeners are too. But I look at the long-term thing. I mean, the Kim Foxes in the world will come and go. When I say come and go, the way they feel is, I think, has some merit, But I also know that if you look at history, I mean, let's put it this way. Hitler was a law and order candidate. So was Stalin. So was Mussolini. People can't stand chaos. And people can't stand it when people around them start getting hurt. And you can have all the Kim Foxes of the world you want and all the Lori Lightfoots. But when you start having, you can't walk down the street here in Chicago on a Saturday afternoon without somebody emptying 60 bullets in an area where there's 5 apartment buildings. The reaction over the next 10 years is going to be exactly the opposite of what Kim Fox wants.
Of course it is.
Because
this is why ameliorative efforts like your police chief is putting into effect. I mean, at least he's trying to do something to shut this down. I mean, the alternative, we actually talked about this, the alternative, I mean, if you want to say, okay, we got to get these guns out of here, all right, fine. We're going to surround certain neighborhoods in Chicago with National Guard. We're going to ring every neighborhood with National Guard troops and vehicles, and then we're going to go door to door, house to house, we're going to turn the places upside down, and every illegal gun we find, we're going to seize arrest the people that are involved.
The thing is, I don't want to see that.
That's not going to work.
But you know what? But if it gets like this, we're going to get to that. And that's not my politics. It's not my way to treat people. But as you know, I'm a big guy. I was never a fighter. I was never a boxer like you or anything like that. But I never felt afraid in this town. I mean, up until recently, when I was 12, we used to take the L from in the total black neighborhoods from the south side of the Cub game. I never felt the least bit afraid. I know nobody ever. There was no gang, black or white, that ever came up with guns and, you know, robbed me or anything like that. I mean, it was, you know, there was always some issue, you know, here and there. But now, last night, or Sunday night, my brother had a little cookout, and I'm coming back from Audrey's, and I stop where he lives in the nearer south side. I drop my niece off at 30, she lives at 35th and Sangamon, somewhere over there. And so I take the city streets home. The next morning, I'm doing a show, and I'm reading Hey Jackass, where all the addresses were. Lou, this is 9 o'clock. I drove past. I just went down, you know, Halsted, a couple places. I went through by three spots within two blocks to where the next 2 hours there was a shooting right where I drove by. And I'm sitting there going, you know, I'm a big old guy now, and I couldn't wipe my way out of a toilet. But the point is, I don't need this crap. I mean, and if a few people go to jail that are wrong, or a cop shoots, I mean, I don't want anybody shooting anybody, but I mean, come on, somewhere this has got to stop, Lou. And
What did you expect to happen when you elected, when the city elected a group of people who were vehemently anti-police, who wanted to defund the police, who wanted to remove the police from these neighborhoods because they believed and they sold this completely erroneous line that the police were more dangerous to these neighborhoods than the inhabitants were.
Well, Lou, what you're seeing is, and this is the part that, you know, I don't think Lori's a dumb lady at all. I mean, when you look at what's going on in the city and you look at the people leaving are the black people that are,
yes,
decent, that are decent people in these neighborhoods. And by the way, as everybody knows, I sometimes will go off on a tangent a little bit. One thing I would say, you can never generalize. Every person that lives in the hills, some people have some teeth, right? I mean, everybody, you go into Englewood and those places, you know, some huge percentage of the population is just trying to make a life there. And
yes.
They're trying to mow their lawn. They're trying to have their kids go to school. There may only be 5 or 6 legitimate houses on every block, but there's 5 or 6 legitimate families on every block that don't seem to have any rights whatsoever, Lou. Their kids can't go down to the corner or a bullet whizzing over their head. Nobody cares about them. I care about them. And those are the people that are leaving. So even Lori has to realize, what, 80,000 black people have left the city in the last 10 years? Those are the people in these neighborhoods that are legitimate people trying to go to work, trying to raise a family, and they're all over the place. It's not like every single person in those neighborhoods a gangbanger. They aren't. I mean, we don't seem to
know. I agree, but they elected people who removed and basically de-incentivized, if that's a word, the efforts of law enforcement on this theory that the police were basically predators.
Well, doesn't somebody
and
have
that's
a
not
right,
just in Chicago?
Doesn't
it's in
some,
New York?
Yeah,
it's in
right.
Philly. It's in Baltimore. It's in L.A. It's in Seattle. In Boston, I mean, every major city where this mentality has taken hold has worked. It's the Ferguson effect.
Well,
you know, and it's a real thing, and this is the payoff of electing people who've promoted that.
Well, you've got there. I believe. I mean, Lou, I really do believe in the Constitution. I really believe in the Declaration of Independence. I don't want to go back to the years of, you know, where you lop people's hands off and things like that,
what I'm saying is
the criminals have rights. I get that part, but the rights don't supersede the right of somebody to send his daughter down to the block for a thing of milk and not get shot. To me, that's way more important than the right of a criminal.
I agree with you. I'm just, and you and I are basically saying the same
yeah.
thing.
Imagine that.
If they take the laws that are on the books and begin enforcing them effectively, and this is what your police chief is trying to do, and what the position of the Ms. Fox, as I understand it, is that you're arresting nonviolent people and adding them into the criminal justice system unnecessarily. And I'm going, they're carrying guns illegally.
Well,
the only
two sets
reason
to
they're nonviolent is that you just hadn't got to them. You hadn't waited long enough.
Lou, careful on that one, because you know, because you were here, some genius or collection of geniuses that we elected closed the Tinley Park mental health facility that was full of people that basically couldn't take care of themselves. And that is not
what you're seeing. What I'm saying in the Chicago Bond Court report.
Right.
What I'm seeing there is how many guys, you just do a quick search sometime and look at how many people have been arrested for murder or deadly assault had multiple arrests and have been released under this catch and release program that your state's attorney, because she's declining to prosecute or requiring no bail, that have been out on this system. The number is staggering.
Right, I'm saying, but Lou, out of the 5,000 people who are in county jail, at one point, probably 1,500 were people that used to be in Tinley that just...
Absolutely. Is Tom Dart still the sheriff?
Yeah, but he's not getting anywhere. Between Tony Preckwinkle and Kim Fox, he might as well be somewhere else.
I mean, he's the guy that I thought said probably the most interesting thing. He said, basically, I'm running a mental health facility
here
at the county jail.
And you know what? And Tinley was still there. It was closed. They could have reopened it. Now they finally sold it so they could burn the bridge. Get a load of this, Lou. These are the numbers that we're talking about. We're talking about this. The carjack-a-rama is now on this. Hey, Jack, as we've got 632 carjacks issued. We got 45 arrests. We're not even close. I think on the murders, we have, let me see what the number is, 84% of the murders don't even have a suspect?
Yep.
We're so ineffective here, we can't even, we're talking about
defund the police.
We have no police on the expressways of any consequence. You never see anybody. They finally arrested some guy, I'm going to say 3-4 weeks ago. David, you remember the story? There was a Metro cop driving along on the Dan Ryan, minding his own business, and a shooting erupts right in front of him. Car gets off on the exit. He follows whoever these guys are to wherever they stop, and he calls 911. And they come and arrest the guy, when he's a witness. So he's a Metro policeman. Now I think that's like the only, isn't that, David, like the only guy that they've arrested on these expressway things in like the last 6 months? It may not be the only one.
That's the only one I've heard of.
Yeah. I mean, you can drive 100 miles, which sometimes I do on the weekends. Sometimes I'll see a client and I go out to Orlando and see Audrey. I never see a policeman, ever, unless there's an accident or an incident. They only answer calls, Lou. They're not pulling anybody over.
You know what I'm seeing, though, Tom? They are starting to come back on the highways.
Really? Which highway?
55, which I drive, and 294, okay. And 294, which I saw the other day.
Okay.
For the first time in a long time, I'm starting to see the police on the highways.
Well, 55 must be safer.
I guarantee you that your state's attorney is of the opinion that more police is actually more of a problem in solving crime than more crime.
Lou, the driving is 100 miles an hour. During the COVID, David, what do we have? We had some ridiculous number of less miles driven, like 30 or 40%, and in the vehicle not homicides, the vehicle deaths were like way higher, weren't they, David?
Oh yeah, because I'll tell you, I'm telling you, Lou, it's 80 miles an hour. Back, 6 months ago, there were no police around. I mean,
sounds like California.
Well, the
speed
limit's 55, and everyone's doing 80, and there's no one around.
I mean, if you go through Ohio, you go through Columbus, you go through Milwaukee, if you don't see nobody drives 80 miles an hour the length of the expressway in Columbus or Milwaukee and doesn't get pulled over. I don't think you could. Here, so what? And a guy, and if somebody goes by at 100, three guys go after him because he's getting away with something I'm not. It's unconscionable.
Well, I'm just saying this goes back to the thing we mentioned earlier about ideologues versus reality, and it would seem to me, again, we go back to, I want you to explain to me, if you're an expert, and Ms. Fox, claimed to have expertise. If you're an expert, I want you to explain to me in 25 words or less how not putting bail in place and releasing people without bail and dropping charges on people engaged in violent, disruptive behavior, including the Black Lives Matter rioters and the other rioters that were involved in breaking windows and everything else downtown last summer, how that is going to improve public safety. Walk me through that. You should be able to explain that to me clearly, notwithstanding whatever your theory is.
Now, you know where I'm going to go with this.
And I haven't seen that, and we see common sense. We see reality out the window versus the ideological blinders that these folks wear and that I think basically are driving the decision-making on these kinds of cases.
Well, we only have 30 seconds. I'm going to say that no matter who you are, a gangbanger or the Pope, one thing matters to you, and it's money. You can't, even Kim Fox has to understand that you can't have a shooting at 1:30 in the afternoon where 50 people are walking their dogs and there's apartment buildings there if you want a city to be a vibrant economic place. I mean, I'm going to say if you had the wherewithal and your daughter lived in one of those buildings, she's home already. She has to be.
More importantly, if your business is located downtown and this is a threat to that business, you're out of there.
Well, if
and
you
there
can
goes
be.
Your tax base,
yeah.
And there goes a bunch of other stuff that is the only thing keeping that city floating.
Everybody's convinced now that the downtown area, which is still a wasteland, by the way, at least the South Loop, is because of COVID. Check again, Lou. It's because of the violence. It didn't get this way because of the violence. It got this way because of COVID. The reluctance to come back down here is because of the violence, I think. Getting there.
I absolutely believe that.
Anyway, thanks, buddy. Have a good weekend. It's getting. Are you hot out there like Arizona?
100 degrees.
Oh boy. Good luck with that. SP Futures down 13. NASDAQ Futures down 62. Be right back, Mr. Dan Janitas.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Allen, this is Dave Scutino on the board. SP Futures down 12. NASDAQ Futures down 55. That's not really the big move of the day. The big move of the day was gold's down like 60 bucks, and we've got interest rates. We got interest rates actually going down, which is really or unchanged after the announcement yesterday, which is, I don't know, in order to keep themselves legit, they must be pouring money in this morning. Guy like Dan Janitas, he's probably sitting there, and they're buying stuff from him, and he's sitting there winging money up the air like he's, who's the guy in The Godfather from Cuba? Hyman Roth.
Yeah.
He's like the Hyman Roth. You're down in Miami.
I feel like you, trying to make a little sense of what's going on in the with the Treasury market here. But, you know, I think the Fed is you know, the sort of discussion to have the discussion is starting to happen. And I basically just say that they, I see them now as being more reactive and proactive. You know, there's you know, they're sort of saying all the right things, but I don't think that we're in any, I don't think there's any reason to be fearful that we're going to see any huge increase in rates anytime soon. And they're talking 2023, a lot can happen between now and then. And then also with the tapering, it hasn't actually really begun just yet. So there's still a huge amount of liquidity in the system. And we are seeing that in the bond world. There is some stuff that's starting to come out that, you know, some opportunities, especially in the areas that we specialize, which is the smaller and microcap stocks, and then the, you know, the bonds, which tend to be more on the high yield side. And one name that I had mentioned last week, which I'm going to mention again because we do like it, it's Genworth. It's an insurance company. It's a predominantly property casualty based in Richmond, old insurance company that's been around from since like 1871. They're not an exciting story from the stock, you know, from an equity point of view, but there are analysts out there that are recommending the stock. So if you like the stock, you're going to love the bonds. And two-year bonds, they mature in 2023, paying 4.90, just about 5%, and you can buy them at just a slight discount right now. And so 5% for 2 years is a pretty good return. And with yield, you know, sort of the yield seekers out there still looking for anything they can get, this I think is a decent idea in the midst of really not a whole lot of other options in fixed income without having to, you know, go longer or, you know, go further down the credit spectrum.
What these seems to me, Dan, I mean, you're closer to these guys than I am. I mean, obviously, insurance companies always have done well. I mean, the life insurance companies were pretty heavily regulated to the extent of how much they could take the profit, and, you know, because you had to do your actuarial calculations. You couldn't just take the whole 20 grand somebody gave you into profit. You had to figure out how long the guy was going to live, and then what you took a certain amount per year. It was pretty well done in such a way. I think they were always pretty solid. And I think they always did well. And the other people, you know, were pretty good to charge and not so quick to pay, I guess. But all of a sudden, it seems recently in the last 3 or 4 years, if you look at how much they're spending on TV and stuff, what has all of a sudden happened where these guys got to be making a fortune? I mean, just the stuff I watch, maybe it's because I watch mostly sports and so forth, and I watch, you know, some of the CNBC. What all of a sudden, there's got to be times on TV where 60-70% of the advertising is insurance companies. I mean, what all of a sudden have made these guys so profitable?
I think, as you were saying, my initial thought is not paying. You know, being able to, you know, make put a lot of amendments in the policies, you know, whether I'm thinking more property and casualty, and, you know, they're you know, some of it is promotion, some of it is competition. A lot of it, I think, is trying to distinguish, you know, the insurance companies try to distinguish themselves. But you're right. I mean, you look at, you know, it seems like I see that Liberty Mutual commercial and the Geico commercial over and over and over again. And, you know, you think you make a good point. The businesses are doing well, right? They wouldn't be advertising that much, but they're boring businesses. They're not exciting. They're not the kind of companies that, you know, that go into Chapter 11, but they're not exciting. And what the analysts will generally say, the street analysts will generally say on these companies, is that they're difficult to follow, as a lot of financial service companies are. There's, you know, it's very difficult to understand when, you know, at what point they're, you know, reporting revenue or where they're capturing revenue, and you know, how that, you know, some of the accounting is still, you know, it's not as straightforward as, say, following a consumer company or a metals company or a building material company. That's, you know, it's a little bit more difficult to get your hands around. And then you're also dealing with, you know, actuarial risk. But what I've seen that's changed, that's made them more profitable, more from a personal point of view, but also from, you know, just the sort of a business point of view, is that they are, you know, sort of limiting what they offer, and they're not paying out as much. And then they're adding these amendments that make it very difficult, as I said earlier, for larger claims. So that's kind of been the trend. It's definitely been the trend here in Florida, where we don't have, where we have a lot of uninsured motorists, for example, when it comes to auto insurance. So people will selectively choose whether they want to just take liability, for example. And I think that's now, I think, to hear Liberty Mutual, to hear and ask Liberty Mutual talk about how they can customize to what you want. I mean, having grown up in Massachusetts where insurance was regulated, you didn't really have a choice, and Liberty Mutual was one of the few. So I think it's the shift more towards being able to, you know, to customize, but I think where they're making their money is on not really, you know, kind of watching their claims, not being able to pay out, or not having to pay out on big claims. And, you know, that's what I've seen.
What, are any of these guys, or, you know, I guess I should have, I've been with State Farm since I was probably 18, you know, so, I guess I got a pretty good rate. I'm not big on changing much. Dan, you probably figured that out, but
yeah.
I know they used to be a mutual where every year I'd actually get a check from them, like a dividend check. And then they said, well, you're for a while, your rate has been reduced. Are any of these people mutual anymore? How did they get from mutual to being stock without me knowing about it? I never got a chance to buy in or anything, even though I was, I guess, a member by being a, some of them are still mutuals, aren't they, or are they?
I think there's still a few, but I think the majority of them have actually moved to, you know, shareholder, you know, corporations like any other corporation. And I don't really, you know, I don't know exactly when that transition took place. It definitely took place over a number of years. I know my first job out of undergrad was with John Hancock, and they were a mutual company, and it seemed back then that there were quite a few, but I know that the change, I think some of it has to do with the corporate culture. A lot of it has to do with, you know, focused on their stock price, and maybe focused a little bit more on the shareholder than the policyholder. And that's, you know, profitability is really what that comes down to.
When that was happening to, remember when that all happened to banks and savings, well, the savings and loans that were left?
Yeah.
There were a couple of guys in the trading floor. They were always interesting creatures on the floor, as you can imagine, Dan. There were guys that went and had, like, a guy or a girl working for them, and all they did was search, like, every mutual savings bank, basically countrywide. And they would open up a 3 or 4 or whatever you needed, say a $500 account in, like, you know, the mutual savings bank of, like, you know, Pawtucket or Rhode Island or someplace.
Right.
With the idea being is that you always had to be offered the stock when they went to a stock company, and they would always buy it. And they always thought it was a terrific deal, and they always, pretty much, and you'll hear them tell it, that they virtually never lost money because you got in at the, essentially, owner's rate. I don't ever recall being sent a letter from State Farm saying I could buy in. Maybe I did. I just tossed it. I don't know. I could have, I suppose.
Yeah, well, it's possible. State Farm, I don't know specifically. I haven't, you know, because it's not one that I've ever looked at or wanted to invest in. And I think, again, on looking at insurance, you know, property casualty or life insurance companies, trying to buy them from trying to buy the stock is difficult. I think trying to analyze the companies is difficult. From a fixed income point of view, like I'm talking about with Genworth here, there are opportunities that come up like this every so often. I tend to have a lot more comfort in the you know, conservatively managed Genworth, you know, companies like that when I'm looking at the fixed income.
Dan, would you
it's a boring story on the equity side. I think the upside is capped. There's competition.
But how did even a guy like you who, and I'm going to say that you do way more work with these guys than I do. Is there anybody around who's expert enough to know that, you know, an asteroid is coming after, you know, Pensacola, and immediately be able to pull out of his brain and say, uh-oh, Joe's insurance is in trouble because they got, you know, 50 houses in Pensacola or something? I mean, does anybody have any idea what the liabilities are of these people and the geography and stuff? I mean, I don't. I mean, there's got to be somebody, but is that also, can you get that information? Not that you ever want to memorize it, but, I mean,
there seems to be, at least just from, like, this is more personal observation than business, you know, than business observation. There seems to be, oftentimes with your homeowners here in Florida, the the amendments to the policy come in May, you know, right before hurricane season. So, you know, and that might be that piece of mail that you get that you toss or you just don't open because you think it's a, you know, it's some kind of advertisement, but it, but that might be the amendment that's telling you that. And I think more than just specifically looking at just the statistics and understanding the probability of, you know, whether it be mortality tables with life insurance or probability of, you know, having claims, you know, based on what, whatever the insurance product is that they offer. It's, they have a way now of figuring out how to, when to make these amendments and when to make these changes to the policies to limit their liability, you know, to limit their, you know, their amount of risk. So they're, I've seen this type of scheme, if you will, and in fact, personally, don't really think it's that beneficial if you're in a place like Florida, unless you really are into your car and want to have top coverage on it. It's, you know, it's not like it was years ago when everyone had insurance, because now you get hit by someone who's not insured, and unless you, you know, all it's going to cover, your policy is going to cover the insurance, you know, whatever the loss is or the damage is, but you're going to get just barely enough to cover it if you're lucky. And, you know, in some cases, you're still going to get marks against you, and the other guy just gets off scot-free.
One of my one of our listeners, Dan, wrote in the other day and said, and talk about timely, I don't know how we got on this subject, but you did. You got us on a subject with Genworth. In 2014 in Minnesota Key, I don't know where the hell that is, the $16,000 policy provided only $155,000 worth of coverage, so it's 11% of home value. He says a friend just bought $1 million home in Amelia. Where's Amelia Island? I have no idea. Last week,
Island's on Jacksonville, the other coast. Yeah,
Was on Amelia. And last week, the quote was $200,000 per year, 20% of the home value. That seems like a lot.
Yeah, well, that's the you know, that's basically for hurricane. That's windstorm insurance, and the, you know, higher incidence of hurricanes in that area. But anything that's close to the water, you're gonna have that. You're gonna have that issue, and yeah, and you're sort of betting against betting against the weather, if you will, by not, you know, keeping full coverage. But
you can't have 20% of it. You can't. There's no way that there's a 20% chance of your house being destroyed. I mean, and the worst hurricane season ever. What is it approach of all homes on the water? I mean, what percentage of them get wrecked? Half of 1%. 20% is a big number.
Yeah, over time, I think if you were to look at it, there's only been a few storms in the last 3 decades, say, that have really done damage, and it's been specific locations, you know, in the state of Florida. I think Georgia's actually gotten hit worse. I think some of the, you know, the Carolinas have gotten hit worse. There's been some, you know, there's more damage there, I think, in general. But yeah, I mean, you're looking at the worst case scenario when you look at insurance. You're protecting yourself against that. And you know, I think having, you know, you kind of learn the tricks of the trade as an investor in property in Florida, that make sure you have enough coverage, maybe you have a second policy, but not, definitely not over insuring, because it's going to be, the cost of having, you know, full coverage is going to be pretty outrageous. So yeah, it's a probability, play.
I want the insured side of this one. 20% of the home. I'm going to say that there's not a 20% chance.
I was thinking 17%. That's what I've heard. But that's I'm not surprised. But yeah, so there is. I mean, that is how they're making money. I think there's, you know, there's a lot of you know, what I've heard. You know, again, more on a personal level, is just, you know, there's a lot of pushback when it comes to paying, and you know, they're willing to go as far as they can, and they're putting more money into not paying as much, because I think there was a period of time where they were losing money. So they figure it out over time. And it's, you know, so I think from an investment point of view, again, going back to Genworth, good from a bond, you know, good as a short-term bond opportunity. Hard to find these. They come along every so often. Interesting thing about this specific bond is only there's less than $20 million outstanding.
Really?
But yet it's very liquid. They're very easy to find. Interactive brokers, you know, trade. You can buy them on Interactive Brokers. They make a two-sided market. No trouble buying them, but it's a small issue. Now, that that shows you what's happening with this, with the liquidity that's been pumped into the systems. You know, it impacts corporate bonds as well as mortgages, pretty much any security, small equities, you know, micro equities, small cap equities. A lot more liquidity than I think I've ever seen in those markets, and I think it's a result of the stimulus and the continued buying, and I don't think that's going to stop, even though there might have been some words yesterday that gave people the indication that there might be some tapering. But I do see in trading that there is definitely the less liquid names have a lot more liquidity than they have in the past.
Well, I'm just looking right here to confirm what you just said. Between May 26th, which wasn't very long ago, and which was 7903, and June 9th, so we're talking 2 weeks, the Fed put $49 billion into the system.
Yeah.
So, I mean, is there no top to, I mean, I'm having real trouble. I've had a bunch of guests on. I keep asking the same question, Dan, but I'll ask you the same question. Do they really think that they can overrun inflation by putting more money in this? Isn't that by like saying the woods are on fire? Let's douse it with gasoline. I mean, what are we doing?
No, I agree. I totally agree. I don't think this is necessarily the best approach. And you know, certainly tapering isn't going to change things that drastically. I think it just changes perception, and the market's all about the perception anyways, but the place that I see it, that I says that where it's real is in the liquidity that it's providing, people right now, I agree with you, I think there's too much being pumped in. I think there should be more attention focused onto on inflation, and I don't think it's as transitory as the, you know, as some people have been saying. I mean, the supply chain issues, yeah, they'll get resolved in time, but there's still some fundamental issues with commodities, you know, oil. There's fundamental issues with getting back to full employment, wage increases. That's part of the cycle. That's naturally part of what happens in the cycle. This is, you know, like I said, we're picking up. I've said this a few times. We're picking up where we left off pre-pandemic, and we're actually further ahead in terms of asset prices than we were. But we're also going to get to that point of fuller employment, if you will, a lot quicker. There's going to be continued demand, which is really driving oil prices, and it's driving everything up. It's driving prices of all raw materials up. And I don't think this is just a temporary glitch in the supply chain. I think this is a permanent, I think a fair amount of it is going to continue with us going forward, and it will mean higher rates at some point, and it will mean a flatter yield curve. And, you know, this is just part of the mature, being in the mature part of the cycle.
Dan, why do you, I'm going to ask a real, sounds like a dumb question here, but I think you'll know what I'm talking about. Don't take that wrong, but why is it, I mean, you know, kind of when you're growing up and you're a kid, you sort of, if you got a slap upside the head for doing something like 2 years before, your collective memory of how you didn't like the slap upside the head kind of fades. Or if you got grounded, or now I guess you take cell phone away from somebody for a weekend, 2 years later, you sort of forget how miserable you were that weekend, right? There's a dumbing down as you go forward, right? But I don't understand how these guys and women could possibly mess with the alligator that was the inflation of the 70s and 80s. I remember it vividly. It was so horrible for so many people and took so long, took out several industries, created the incredible embarrassment of the Resolution Trust. How anybody, these guys don't seem to have any collective memory of how bad that was. They seem very willing to go right next to that alligator and hope he doesn't wake up. Why? Well, I mean, are they that dumb? Are they? They don't have any. They don't have the historical knowledge that somebody should have in that position. I don't think they're dumb.
Sure. Yeah.
I mean, what do you think it is?
I totally agree with you. Short memory is part of it. I also think the age of, you know, people who have been in the field for, you know, this field for a decade, say out of business school, you know, really haven't experienced a major downturn, you know, really haven't experienced any type of significant inflation or noticeable inflation. So they're, you know, I think some of it is just a lack of experience. And then for those other people, I think they're, you know, they're, you know, people do forget. There is a, people do get caught up. I think it's the nature of our business. There's a certain element of greed and element of wanting more. And I think that's the momentum that you see, especially on the tech side, where, you know, more and more and more. It doesn't mean that we aren't going to continue to see that growth, but I think that that's where we have to kind of pull back a little bit with making sure that our clients are well diversified and, you know, have exposure to areas that are going to perform well when the market turns down. And, you know, where we can also preserve capital. But I absolutely agree with you that short memory, and maybe some of it is also just as we start getting older too, that, you know, those things are clear in my mind still, but they're not clear necessarily in the mind that say, oh, my clients or, you know, you have to refer back to those periods that people really don't remember. So unless you can talk about something specific, like, remember what the rate was on your first house, you know, when you got a mortgage. That might be like an example I can understand.
Well, they had a dude on, a gentleman on CNBC a couple weeks ago, and he was a younger guy. He happened to be African-American guy. And he comes on and he says, you know, I've been doing some research on that era, the market and the inflationary era and the interest rates. And he goes, when interest rates went from 3% to like 6 or 7 on the federal funds rate. And he didn't take the whole era. He just said, this is when the market, when it first started, he goes, the market was roughly 20 times earnings, you know, average. Obviously, some were higher, some were lower. He said, it was roughly 20 times earnings. And by the time the interest rates got to 7, 8, 9%, the market had come back to being 10 times earnings because essentially they were competing with the risk-free rate and the bond rates, right? He says, so it's exactly what you would expect. You wouldn't expect companies to be at 20 times earnings when you can get 6% risk-free. I mean, he says, but now, because you've got companies that are, the average is more like 25, 30 with some like 100, and right. He goes, if that were to happen again, to not think that there would be a 50 to 60% drop in market prices, more than that in the companies that are, he goes, how would you not expect that to happen? He goes, and nobody does. It was like the Gong Show. They got the hook out and yanked that guy off the stage so fast he couldn't even, you know, he was scrambling. Right. I mean, nobody wanted to hear it at all, man. And yet, it's so obvious. How could that not happen?
It could happen if there's, you know, especially if there's an acceleration in rates.
Yeah.
That if it's it's the speed at which it happens, you know, where people don't have time to respond. Or maybe as you're also alluded to, the time to like accept it or believe that it's really happening. But I think the first stage in all this is understanding that there, you know, we do have inflation. It's real. And, you know, and then the next step should be some pulling back by the Fed, and the next step should be, you know, some, hopefully gradually. I would rather see gradual increases in rates rather than sort of waiting until the last moment and saying, hey, now we have to make these, you know, these sudden increases, and they're happening, you know, right after, one after the next. So hopefully we're not going to be in 2023 saying, oh, remember when they were talking about maybe two increases in 2023? Hopefully we're not going to be there and seeing, you know, three or four or five increases because it's necessary at that point.
Well, I'd almost rather...
That's part of this sort of reactive mentality that the Fed has right now, that it's really not, you know, they're assuming that we're not going to see, you know, the worst case scenario, or they're actually hoping, I think, or maybe a little bit in denial that we're not going to have, you know, that history doesn't repeat itself now. But I believe what you're saying. I think we have the same thought process on this as it does. I think that a lot of the basics of the our business stay the same. They might look a little different year to year, but the basics are still there. And some of the basic fundamentals, like understanding the impact of inflation on the economy and on different businesses, and the impact of higher rates.
Well, Dan, you mentioned
not going away.
On this Genworth, you mentioned that the 2 years is out 5%. Is that about as far as you're going now, is out 2 years, because you are concerned about this, obviously?
Absolutely, yeah. I have not been going long. I haven't been going longer for a while because, you know, the risk return is not there as rates drop this far. Now, you could still, from a percentage point of view, you could still make money. Like, if you had put money in the 10-year at 175 and then dropped, now it's closer to 150, yeah, you could make money, but that's a short-term trade. I mean, the trend is, you know, the trend doesn't go up in a straight line, but the trend is still going to be upward.
I have to believe.
I think that's pretty obvious.
I have to believe, Dan, that if you had a client that demanded you buy him 10-year bonds at 175, and now those things are trading for a nice profit at 150, that you're calling the guy saying, "Hey, you got away with it. Let's sell."
Yeah, yeah. Now would be the time to sell. Absolutely, this would be the time to take the. Yeah.
No, all right. So having said all that, and we only have a minute. Having said all that, last week, well, it might have been 2 weeks now, but there was a 10-year auction, and it was oversubscribed by like 2.3 or something.
Yeah.
And the rate came in at 1.48 or 49. I'm going to assume that the Fed ended up buying some of that, even on the rebound. But the question is, who the hell's buying the rest, Dan? I mean, it's such a horrible trade for somebody. You would never
it
put
is.
Anybody in that. I would. Who are these people? I'll ask
no, it is. And but who they are some are institutional investors that have, you know, pension funds that have requirements to buy certain rated securities, so they only can buy, you know, AAA rated or then, you know, single A rated, and they're you know, that's a requirement. Just like when you're managing a mutual fund, you have to still invest in your strategy, whether or not it's in favor. Even if you don't think it's in favor, you can only usually only hold like up to 20% in cash or other investments. So you have to still have 80% of that. So there's that element, whether it be funds or you know, pension funds, government funds, you know, municipalities, state funds. But then there's also foreign investors who still view our market as a safety net. You know, it's a flight to safety. And I think as people are taking some of their gains out of the stock market and maybe considering real estate, they're parking some of that in governments right now.
Dan, we got a dash,
I think,
buddy.
On a bigger scale, it's the corporations and the pension funds and the international funds that are.
Dan, we got a dash, bud. Thank you very much. As usual, great stuff. We'll get your stuff out there. We'll try to tweet out what you said. SP futures down 14 now, NASDAQ futures down 65. Still not all that much. Considering what happened yesterday, in one man's opinion.
Yeah.
Be right back, Mr. Bill Cohen. This should be very fun.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to factor in the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other life decision. Your brain is smarter than your gut, and that's why you owe it to yourself to read Luckbox. We've made it easy because Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with timely, actionable trading ideas, and equips you with savvy investing tactics you don't already know, all while exploring how to live your best life through music, spirits, food, sports, travel, fitness, and a whole lot more. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on controlling their financial futures. It's for overachievers and alpha types who don't buy into Wall Street's investment gurus. It's for mavericks who believe in life, luxury, and the pursuit of happiness. It's for you. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term.
I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, owner of HomeSource Realty and frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks radio show. If you're thinking about purchasing real estate, this summer could be a good time to shop around. Whether you're a novice or seasoned investor, low interest rates and good inventory make adding bricks and mortar investment to your portfolio an interesting possibility. Many a great fortune has begun with the purchase of property. Call me today for your personal investment consultation, and I would be happy to get you started on your path to prosperity. You could reach me at AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com or call me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Holley. Mr. Dave Scottino on the board. In a second, we're going to have Mr. Bill Cohen. As soon as I run through what's going on in the world, their S&P futures down, well, the September futures down 1475. September NASDAQ futures down 60. Again, we flipped today. So as of tomorrow, there won't be any. The June's close on the opening, right, David? They settle on Thursday? Or they can't, unless they trade and say they settle tomorrow, we'll figure that out.
Sell tomorrow.
So settle tomorrow. But you can't trade them tomorrow, right? They settle on the opening?
I believe so.
We got a Dow down 125 over in Europe. We've got DAX down, very muted in Europe. DAX down 10, I call that flat. FTSE down 38.5%. CAC around down 3, call that flat. Over in Asia, Nikkei down, well, almost a full 1%, 272.93. Shanghai up 7. Now, they were down yesterday. They're up 7 today, 0.2%. Hang Seng was down yesterday pretty heavy. They're up 121.4%. The mainland Chinese markets were down pretty heavy yesterday, and they bounced back a little bit. They're down 2%. They're up like 4%, 0.4, so like the dead cat bounce, I guess you want to call it. Bonds pretty much unchanged at 1.56 10-year, which is kind of stunning considering the Fed announcement yesterday. But the Bund has moved up pretty substantially up. They're less negative. I got a minus 0.16, where they were minus 0.29 2 days ago. Japan, positive 0.06. They had made it down to positive 0.03. So their rates are moving up as well. Ours are not. UK up 7 basis points. That's a lot. To 0.81. So everybody's moving but us. Oil down 38 cents, 71.77. Brent down 47 cents, but still 73.92. Natural gas down 4 cents, 3.20. RBOB unchanged at 2.15. Gold, whack, whack, whack. Down 83 points now, 17.78, which is almost 5%. Silver down they're down $1.40, which is 5%, which is a real lot, 26.35. Copper down 11 cents, 4.27. So just hint of interest rates is taking those guys down, which is, again, kind of weird. We'll talk to Mr. Cohen about that. Bitcoin down 101 at 38,713. David, how about a real quick traffic weather sports?
Yeah, we'll do this quickly. 7:36 in Chicago. Currently, the weather's 64 and sunny. It's going to be 90 with a mix of clouds and sun with storms tonight. Phoenix listeners, get ready for a hot one. You're going to hit 118 for record highs today. Traffic, heavy buildup on the Kennedy and Eisenhower due to long-term construction. There's slow traffic on 55 North at the 94 exit ramp. And baseball last night, the Sox hold on to beat the Rays 8-7 in 10 innings. Cubs drop 3 in a row, lose to the Rays 6-3. Diamondbacks fall to the Giants 13-7 for its 22nd straight road loss, tied for the longest such streak since 1900. And in golf, the U.S. Open starts today at Torrey Pines. Back to you, Chief.
I'm going
to
say that a 12 o'clock tee off at one of those places in Scottsdale today might be negotiable in price.
Yeah, I think it would be free.
Like they might. Mr. Cohen, how are you? Welcome back, buddy.
Yeah. Great to be here. Thank you for having me.
Boy, I'm thinking the last time you were on, and I don't know why we have not had you on, we were talking about the Duke lacrosse scandal, weren't we? Or the Duke...
That would have been a long time ago.
Yeah, it was a while. You just put the book out. It was that long ago, I think.
Well, that book came out in like 2011 or
wasn't that long ago? But we did talk. You know who? I think we ran with.
That had me on more often.
Oh, absolutely! I think we ran with Lou Michaels, who's a graduate of Duke and an attorney. So he was he must have just read it, and he said, "See if you can get him on to talk about that." And you came on, and we talked about it. As I recall,
that was fun.
It was fun. What is What is what's the show? What in the Sam Hill is going on here with the Fed? What are we doing here? Yeah, I saw your article. Obviously, you have somewhat of the same view of this as me. Are they out of control? Are they about to get out of control? Or what's your read? Who are they following? What are they doing?
Yeah, so yesterday's announcement when they sort of hinted that they would begin to raise rates in 2023, it's 2 years from now, and as you were talking about, just before, markets have sort of reacted to that, but not our bond markets, which I don't understand. I would think that, some reality would start creeping in there. I think since 2008, the Fed has shown repeatedly that it's willing to backstop the financial markets. And so I think traders have just decided, okay, anytime there's trouble, the Fed is going to step in. And, that's probably a good thing in the short term, but it creates this atmosphere where people are mispricing risk left and right. And, to me, the bellwether indicator of this is how high yield bonds are trading, and yielding 4% is not what we think of when we think of high yield bonds. That's just clear to me that people are bidding up the price of bonds to lower that yield and are not getting rewarded for the risk that they're taking. And when treasuries start backing up, as they should, to 4%, then high yield bonds are going to trade in half, and that yield is going to go to 8, and people are going to lose a lot of money.
Well, Bill, when it first started, I mean, I don't know how the guy who invented that was. Well, I always forget his name. Who's the guy that ended up going to jail?
Ben Bernanke?
No, the guy who ended up going to who actually invented the junk bond.
Oh, Mike Milken.
Mike Milken, the guy with the bad toupee.
Yeah. Never forget him.
Oh yeah, well, I never forget him. I always remember the toupee and how he had to go to take it off when he went to jail.
Right.
But for a while before he got involved and didn't watch his behind, he was a genius in a lot of ways because he gave people a.
I completely agree with that.
I talked to you. I always have to watch my P's and Q's because I know you know this more than me. His deal was that if you put people in these not investment grades, meaning junk bonds, but you give everybody a package of them, the rate at the time was around, I'm going to say 11-12% when other people were paying 6 or 7, and his idea was that if 1 out of 10 went under, or 1 out of 20, and he packaged you with a group of like 100 of them, and there are 50 of them instead of one, that you would still be ahead of the game. Because even if you lost 1 or 2, you still were going to make 8, which is better than the 6 you were getting in a double A, say. And he actually performed better than that, from what I understand. So his people, they didn't make the full 10 or 11, because a couple of them did go under. But not very many, and you ended up with a higher rate than if you would have gotten safer places because you were diversified. Correct? I mean, I think that was the whole deal. But now, if you knock that number down to 4 or 5, like you're saying, there's no way you can lose any of those and still be okay, right? I mean, they're too low.
What you were saying before, I think, was an important point. In the old days, by, the 80s, 90s, early 2000s, the yield on, junk bonds, high yield bonds, was 10, 11, 12, 9%, something like that. In February of 2020, when, we thought, pre-pandemic, we thought that the market was, roaring hot, this was, the final months of Trump administration, the market was roaring hot, the high yield on the high yield bonds was 5%. And I thought that was ridiculous. Then the Fed kicks in March of 2020 and then again in April of 2020, and now we're talking about 4%. That's just, to me, indication of investors have lost their minds, and are willing to accept a low yield for incredibly high risk. That they're not going to get paid for, and there's frankly only it's priced for perfection. So there's only one way that can go. It's like if you're a AAA rated company. I'm writing my new book about the rise and fall of GE, and GE was of course a AAA rated company. And there's only one way a AAA rated company can go down, and it went down. with the yields on junk bonds at 4%, there's only one way that that can go, and that's up. And that means that the price of the bond is going to go down. And if you bought bonds at par yielding 4%, you're going to lose a lot of money. You know, there's just no other way to skin that cat. And the Fed has been enabling that, and maybe yesterday they're beginning to realize that this is unsustainable, and it's been going on now for 12 years. The Fed balance sheet is around $8 trillion now. They're talking about, the New York Fed says they think it's going to go to $9 trillion before this charade is over. I mean, they continue to buy. They continue to bigfoot the bond market, and they continue to manipulate interest rates, and that's not healthy for anyone.
Well, but why do you think that they... We go back to the parallels of the 70s and 80s. Actually, probably started in 68 when they tried to finance some of the war in Vietnam by increasing the money supply. But it seems like what they're doing, anybody who's been around a while is going to say, boy, if they're doing that stuff, I need to sell these bonds, because these things, these rates are going up. So obviously, if you think rates are going up, you want to sell bonds. And the Fed is saying, try it. I'm going to buy as many as you can sell. And they've been doing now that for a long time, and there seems to be no limit. I don't think that was ever anybody's thought process that in 1973 you were just going to create money and just bury anybody who decided that interest rates might actually go up, you know, with the inflation that was happening. I mean, why? I don't think that was ever exactly in their charter, whatever that even is anymore. I mean, how they seem to have no limit. It's not about needing money in the system right now, I don't think. It's about guys like you and me saying, hey, these bonds should go down, I'm shorting them. Try it, you two mopes. We got $30 billion this week saying we're right and you're wrong. Am I right or wrong?
I think you're absolutely right. I mean, actually, the origins of quantitative easing were in the early 30s. Roosevelt tried it for a short period of time, and it met with great opposition, so he abandoned it. And I think that's where Ben Bernanke, who studied the Great Depression, came up with this idea and then implemented it after 2008. And he sort of tried to wind it down a little bit in the mid-teens of the 2000s, and now we're, of course, back up to it in spades, doubling sort of where we were at the end of the first run of it. Look, I think that, you know, the old expression, you can't fight the Fed, and we're seeing that, you know, prove out. I mean, and people have actually made money, frankly. I mean, I've been saying that you know, for years now, that this is, I feel like a broken clock, right, twice a day. But, I mean, I feel, you know, that this is creating mispricing of risk all throughout the bond market, and it's also leaking into other things like meme stocks and Bitcoin and NFTs and the deli in New Jersey. So there's this crazy leakage. But people have made money because, you know, they don't bet against the Fed. They bet with the Fed. And so they, you know, interest rates, instead of moving up, they sometimes move down after moving up a little bit, and they've made money sort of trading in and trading out. But, you know, good for them, I say, but that's the long-term effect of all this is going to be very, very bad. There's going to be a blow up. I mean, the question that I was raising in my article is, does the Fed have the stomach to actually begin to take the morphine drip out of our arms? Do they even know how to do that in a way that doesn't get the markets all flustered? You know, they tried in 2018 and there was the taper tantrum. I think they just have to let the markets have their damn tantrum and move on and pull out of this stuff and let the supply and demand determine the cost of money instead of this big, huge kahuna of a buyer that steps in and buys whenever people start getting worried about things.
Well, Bill, Dave and I were talking on the way in. We parked a couple blocks away, and he was talking about two members of our family, because Dave is actually... What is my brother's brother-in-law to me? I don't know, a friend, I guess, but so maybe we're not in this. But anyway, we're close. And I said, boy, the amazing thing is that people in this country are arguing over beers and coffee right and left, and they mustn't realize that while they're arguing, other people are stealing their dough. I think that there's a group in this country, they don't care what happens to the rest of us as long as these asset prices stay up. And the Fed's job has become that. And I, it always probably was there a little bit. Nobody ever wanted a market crash on their watch. But right. now it's to the point where we have to maintain stocks at 100 times revenue. I don't think you can, even the Fed. I mean, they think they can, but I'm more of a purist. I have a feeling you agree with me that someday, somewhere, even they run out of bullets somehow. Something happens to where... But I have a very specific question for you, because just by talking to you and reading your stuff, you have a pretty good sense of history. When inflation happens, this is going to come out of left field, it's going to sound, but when inflation happens, most cases around the world, be it the Weimar, Iran, Argentina, Venezuela, maybe even now Turkey, which is probably another example, it usually comes from, you know, an increase kind of in the money supply that somebody tries to do, and all of a sudden, but the market shoots up dramatically. I mean, the Weimar Republic market went to like a million, didn't it? Even though everybody in the place was eviscerated. In the 70s here, it never acted like that. It started kind of almost at a blue collar level when it started. It started with the Fed, but the first start that anybody saw was the Arab oil embargo, right? It started, and then all of a sudden, it came in kind of at a level at which was, I'll use the term blue collar, interest rates immediately started to go up, and the market started to go down. We never got that. Oh my God, the money value is going down, so the price of G better like quadruple. Was that an outlier? Is what's happening now, where the asset prices go to the moon? Is this more of the norm, I guess? Because I keep looking at it, this is not acting like it did in 75. It's not at all. I mean, but maybe 75 was the outlier. Please answer. I mean,
it might have been because, you know, when zero, you know, the government then was issuing, you know, zero coupon bonds, and I think they were yielding like 15 or 18%. I mean, if you could buy treasuries, zero coupon treasuries, they were yielding 18%. Why would you invest in the stock market?
Oh yeah, I mean,
now we have the exact opposite. So now you have the 30-year at whatever 2.17%. How can you invest in that? Of course, you got to go to the bond, the stock market, because if you even buy a dividend yielding stock, you're going to get more than 2.1%. How can you hold a bond for 30 years? I mean, if you hold it to maturity, you're going to get your 2.17%. And inflation is already running, you know, it's 5% supposedly last quarter. So, you know, the value of what that's buying is diminishing rapidly. Okay. If you sell that bond into higher interest rate environment, you're going to lose your principal. I mean, who can buy that security? I don't understand who's buying it. To me, the bond market is uninvestable. It seems like quite the opposite. Even, of course, gas prices are much higher now than they were in the 80s. So interesting. We all thought we were going to run out of gas in the late 70s, early 80s, or, you know, oil and gasoline. And now gas prices are much higher, and there seems to be plenty of it around. You know, go figure that. But I don't think, you know, the bond market to me is uninvestable. So if the bond market is uninvestable, which is like four times the size of the stock market, then you've got to invest in the stock market. And if you invest in this or take, you know, crazy risks in the high yield market, if you're investing in the stock market, you know, interest, I mean, you know, profit, corporate profits are way up because of the reducing the tax rate from 35 to 21, and interest rates are so low that borrowing on corporate debt isn't eating up as much as the profits. So there is correlation between the profits of these, of corporate America and the stock market. So it's not totally crazy valuation in the stock market, but it's getting there. I mean, so if you can't invest in the stock market, you can't invest in the bond market, you know, you don't want Bitcoin, you don't want an NFT, you don't want the deli in New Jersey. I mean, literally, it really, I mean, I wouldn't want to be a portfolio manager now. I wouldn't want to be an endowment manager right now. Where
careful there. Careful there. That's what I do.
I know. It's hard for you. You have my sympathy.
Well, I mean,
all day long.
That's where I get sort of my thought process on this, right, what you're talking about. If you gave me, well, you care about your money, but you care about your dad's money probably more. If you gave me your dad's money, you know, $10 million lands there, and I put it in a 10-year bond and tried to charge you a fee for managing it, I think you'd come after me with a machine gun. It's such a horrendous trade. Who's even doing it? Yet our government's doing it.
And lots of people are doing it, and there are traders who have, like, sort of, as I was saying, playing the Fed and the nuances and, you know, the subtleties of the trading in the bond market and making money, you know, day in and day out, trading in and trading out. But, you know, you, as a long-term portfolio manager or endowment fund, or you've got a, you're a fiduciary for somebody's money, I mean, I don't know how you invest in the bond market. That puts you in the stock market, which, of course, you know, the stock market has been great. It's gone from 6,500 in March of 2009, when everyone was freaking out, to 34,000 today. That is, you know, you don't have to be in a hedge fund or a private equity fund to get that quintupling. That's pretty great. But now what?
Well, Bill, if you were back in, I imagine, was Ferrers had to be a prime dealer, weren't they? I would guess they were.
Say that again?
Was your former firm, Ferrers? They were a prime dealer.
Oh, Lazard.
Lazard, yeah. Were they a prime dealer? They must have been.
Right. You know, the market, you know, their bond effort was so minimal. But, yes.
Okay. I'm saying today, if you were a Goldman or a Citi or Jamie Dimon, the Treasury goes out and borrows money. So you get the commission on that. And you go out and gather that up for them, and 30 seconds later, the phone rings and the Fed says, "Go buy it back." You charge a commission on that, and you scalp the vig in the middle. I got to believe good days are had by all in those industries. I mean, how could it get any better?
After the financial crisis eliminated two of the big investment banks, Bear and Lehman, and then pushed Merrill Lynch into Bank of America, I would go on Bloomberg TV and talk about all the time how it was going to be a new golden age of Wall Street, and everybody would snicker at me. But, I mean, you can't really get much better than this.
No.
I mean, J.P. Morgan is making $9 billion a quarter.
And they'll say it's on fixed income trading. Well, who are they trading against? It's the Fed, duh. Right?
Exactly. And corporations are issuing bonds like it's going out of style, and leveraged loans and no doc loans, whatever it is, they're doing everything they can because they, you know, the smart money recognizes this is a historic moment. Basically, interest rates are never going to be this low again for this long.
Hey, can I shift up? I'll do a Paul Harvey page too. I know you mentioned you're doing something.
I love Paul Harvey.
On GE. But you know what?
Yep.
I never understood when I was a kid listening to him why he would do the page two, page three.
And yet, I know, but it's so great.
Well, as soon as I started doing stuff on the air, when I have you with me, it's very easy to change subjects. If you're by yourself, it is really hard to all of a sudden be talking about the Fed with you, then asking you about, you know, Duke Lacrosse. I mean, it's easy when you're here, but when you're not,
people can talk about those things at the same breath.
Well, but I'm saying that's why he would say page two, and then you would just start on something totally different. Because if you're not with somebody, it's real hard to do it. Host a show one time, and you know what I'm talking about. It's very hard to change directions on your own. That's why I need Maddie or David here. I at least can use them as a foil, for lack of a better term. Anyway, how much of the GE history, and I'm sure you're well into this more than me, had intertwined with the Resolution Trust? I'm going to say a real lot.
Well, I think you have to... The biggest part of the GE story is GE Capital.
Right.
Jack Welch fell in love with it. It started in the Depression as a way to help people buy dishwashers, washing machines, refrigerators. So modest level of financing. And then Jack realized that he could arbitrage GE's AAA credit rating, get a very low cost of borrowing, and arbitrage that, you know, into high rates of return, lending that money out, where nobody else would, in innovative ways, and, just make a killing, which was, of course, a brilliant, observation, and he sort of fell in love with that, and I started my career on Wall Street working at GE Capital, lending money for leverage buyouts. I mean, Jack was very much tuned in to finance and helped create the financialization of America. And it also, of course, gave him a huge opportunity to sell assets out of GE Capital as needed to make his quarterly numbers. And he's, by the way, he saw nothing wrong with that, and I don't think necessarily there is anything wrong with that. He had the assets, he could sell them, and why not? Why not make numbers as opposed to not make your numbers? So, and Wall Street just fell in love with that, even though most research analysts on Wall Street didn't understand GE Capital. And then, you know, after Enron and WorldCom, you know, then people started picking on GE Capital, saying, well, it's a big black box, we don't understand it. Of course, by then Jack was gone, and then in 2008, all of a sudden, it was a huge liability to have borrowed all this money in the short-term markets, because GE Capital relied on the commercial paper market because it didn't have any deposits, and lend it long-term. So once again, you have the classic problem of borrowing short and lending long, and that gets banks into trouble all the time. All the time. That's the way it goes down, every single time. And, you know, then they made the decision to get out of that business, which, you know, they have their reasons. I happen to think they were wrong, because, you know, what industry is making more money hand over fist than ever now? It's the financial services.
Oh, God, yeah. Well, didn't
they have their reasons.
Didn't they take a greater percentage of assets out of the Resolution Trust after the 80s fiasco than anybody else?
You know, I think that may be a misperception. I know that Jack at one point wanted to do that, or his guys wanted to do that, like Gary Wendt at GE Capital wanted to do that and brought that up, at least there's one instance anyway, where they brought that up to Jack, and Jack said, you know, it wouldn't be right for GE, the great GE, to take advantage of sort of the Resolution Trust situation where there were all these depressed assets and buy these assets from the government at a discount.
Bill, we got a dash here, buddy, but I we haven't even scratched the surface of what we need to talk about, so it won't be very long before we ask you back. I could sit here all day. I mean, this is great stuff.
Thank you.
Take care of yourself. SP Futures down 12, right. NASDAQ Futures down 54. I love that. David, good job. We'll be back tomorrow. Stocks and Jocks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTIsecurities.com. PTI ProDirect. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.